Despite all of the creativity and playing inside this rule sandbox, there were some brewers at the time that hated this rule. Well, like probably more than some. This rule upset a lot of people. Welcome to the Beer Feelings Podcast, where together we are indulging in life and craft beer. This show is all about demystifying the craft beer space in a fun and flirty way for those who are just beginning their beer journey, or for people who already love their brews and are hungry to learn more. My name is Natalie Jones, and I am the beer drinking gal pal you never knew you had. Now, if you've been a loyal listener to the show, you'll know that the past couple of weeks, we've been focused on all things German beer, from their history to their flavors. Well, as I prepared for each of these prior episodes, there was one term that kept coming up, which I had heard about before, but I really didn't have much background on, which is Reinheitsgebot. So I finally decided to dig a little bit deeper on this topic and bring you guys along for the ride. Today's episode is all about Reinheitsgebot. How did it start? What does it even mean? Did it help or hurt German beer culture overall? And what did any of this have to do with the German Weissbier? Special thanks to the Complete Beer Course by Joshua Bernstein and National Geographic's Atlas of Beer by Nancy Holst-Pullen and Mark Patterson for teaching me all that I know and then get to share with you guys today about Reinheitsgebot. With all that being said, let's hop into it. Now, before we get started, a speedy request from me that if you're enjoying this show, I would love it if you told a friend or even better, left a review on Apple Podcasts to help other beer lovers or soon-to-be beer lovers find the show. So big thank you in advance. But I guess like one other quick aside before we get started. A few weeks ago, I was on vacation and there were two Germans in our tour group. So I, of course, cornered them and I talked a lot about beer, especially like one was from Cologne. That's where the Kolsch is from. We talked a lot about beer. And one thing that I made sure to do was ask them how to pronounce Reinheitsgebot because I knew I wanted to make this episode. So big shout out to Daniel and Uta. If you're listening, I hope you're I hope I'm doing you proud. Reinheitsgebot. Where I think Aaron, my fiance, is sick of me saying that around the house. But here we are. The episode is happening. But let's kick things off. How did this set of purity laws start? Now, way back in 1516, Duke Wilhelm, I'm assuming it's Wilhelm, IV, who was the ruler of Bavaria at the time, which just a quick reminder is just a region of Germany, started these beer restrictions, which eventually turned into what we now know as Reinheitsgebot. These rules basically were split into three big sections. The first is it fixed beer prices kind of at the same rate in both the summer as well as in the wintertime. Second was it forbid the use of wheat or rye in the creating of beer. And finally, the third rule, which I think is kind of like tied to the second one, but it is its own separate rule. Basically, he made a rule where if you wanted to call a beverage a beer, it meant that it could only be made out of barley, water, and hops. Now, if you've been following along, you guys know that yeast is also a crucial ingredient in the creation of beer. Way back then, they had no idea that yeast was even a thing. And basically, like the yeast was just naturally present. So kind of more like spontaneous fermentation, but it was already in the grain. So that's why Reinheitsgebot, when you're looking way back at the original ruling, we're only seeing barley, water, and hops. Now, most people, when they look back at this ruling, they thought that it was a health measure because breweries at that time were, frankly, pretty unsanitary, and it prevented weird, germy, and sometimes hallucinogenic things from being added into the beer. Back then, there was no health department and no rules, so these regulations, like, really were there to protect people, right? Well, there's also some speculation that this was monetarily based because it kept the other grains, all of those wheats and the ryes, free for bakeries to use, which if we look at the law of supply and demand, man, like this is really bringing up like my education. Thank goodness I went to college and have a degree in business. But regardless, if the breweries weren't using wheat and rye, that means that bakers could buy it for a more affordable rate, and it kept the price for the bakeries a little bit lower. So lots of speculation on, you know, why these rules even came to be. But no matter how you slice it, these rules really push brewers to get creative within the ingredients and preparation styles, since they couldn't innovate this beverage with new ingredients. They couldn't introduce new ingredients to the mix. So basically what they did is they sat down and said, how do we get these three things to taste different? Can we make the barley more mild? Can we prepare it a different way? Can we roast it a different way to make it taste more like caramel or more like smoke or more bitter? Can we add in different hops that maybe are more spicy? Maybe they're more citrusy. And then how can we combine these things, just these three ingredients, in the perfect way so that we can get this variety of beverages? So it was kind of like taking, now I'm thinking about my college education. I was a costume design major for a little bit. And so you start off with like general costume history, and then you get like, you dive deeper into like color theory and fabrics and like all these very specific things. That's kind of what happened in Germany with beer, because they couldn't introduce new things. They had to experiment, they had to explore, and they had to know everything there was to know about those three ingredients. Then outside of the ingredients, the question really became, can we prepare this beer in a new way, creating even more styles? And the answer, of course, was yes. Lagering was made as a result. Basically, lagering was made out of necessity at this period. Beer was kept down in these cool caves in order to keep it preserved over the warm months, which is kind of like what we were talking about last episode with the Marzen, but it, out of necessity, brought to light this cool new way to make beer. So now not only could they make ales, but they could also make lagers. So even more variety. So basically, all is to say, out of these restrictions came some really cool stuff. Really, without Rheinheitsgebot, we wouldn't have the amazing variety of German beers that we do today. And as I was putting together this episode and as I was learning and thinking about this, it kind of reminded me of the shutdowns in 2020. When people are pushed up against a wall, they tend to make some pretty cool things. I mean, that's how beer feelings came to be. Pushed up against a wall, day drinking a lot, said, let's start a business on a global shutdown. But the beer. Don't get me wrong. Despite all of the creativity and playing inside this rule sandbox, there were some brewers at the time that hated this rule. Well, like probably more than some. This rule upset a lot of people. But the upset parties who had money could do something about it, which brings me to the story of the German Weissbier that I didn't even know that I wanted to learn about. The Degenberger family. Sorry, Uta and Daniel, you didn't teach me how to pronounce this one, so we're giving it our best go. But this family was one of those groups that were not fans of Rheinheitsgebot, but they were a little bit different than the average Joe because they had a lot of money. Basically, the royal family granted a singular brewing exception that allowed the Degenbergers to use wheat, one of those forbidden ingredients, and continue brewing Weissbiers or wheat beers and basically hold a monopoly on the space as long as they could pay the pretty hefty tax on it. Now, this exception stayed with the family until they ran out of heirs. So it lasted a number of different generations, but eventually it did happen. They ran out of kind of grandsons and granddaughters to pass this on down to. And then eventually it kicked back to the royal family. Now, Duke Maximilian I was the ruling party of Bavaria at the time, and basically he had a choice. He could let this forbidden style die out with the Degenbergers, or he could take control of its distribution and its creation. Now, no shocker here, because it was such a popular style at the time. And honest, wheat beers are delicious. I love them. Everybody I know, not everybody I know loves them, but a number of people that I know like wheat beers. Germany back then was no different. So what he decided to do was to bring this style back to the masses. And on top of all of that, because he was in power, he was in control, he ordered innkeepers to purchase his Weissbier, further lining the royal pockets. What's so crazy to me about this is the state reported that nearly one-third of its annual revenues came from the sale of this forbidden beverage that nobody else was basically allowed to brew. This is bananas. But this lasted until 1872, when the ruling royals at the time decided to loosen their grip and let other brewers basically come to the wheat beer party and hang out and brew this style as well. Now, of course, along the way, between 1516 and today, Reinheitsgebot's rules have continued to ebb and flow, bringing them into the modern day. But I thought these two big chunks of the story are what I found to be the most interesting and what I wanted to share with you guys. I guess I actually do have one more fun fact that I learned before I head out for today. Greece's first king was King Otto, who started out, like before he was the king of Greece, he started out as a Bavarian prince. So Greece had to follow these purity laws. They had to follow Reinheitsgebot for a little bit of time too, which makes the couple of beers that I enjoyed while in Greece make a lot more sense because they tasted a lot like German beers. But I want to wrap things up for this episode before we get too full of beer history. I hope this episode gave you a couple fun facts for you to share around the bar next time you go out with friends or have your next dinner get together. But no matter what you choose to do, I hope you're doing it with a great beer in hand and even better people by your side. Catch everybody next week. Cheers.